source for everything paranormal. Para X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Blessed be, heed the words I call to thee. Honor the old ones in name and deed, hearken not to others' greed. Pray to the moon when she is round, luck with you shall then abound. Respect the earth, the sky, the sea, as you will it, so mote it be. Welcome to Stirring the Cauldron on the Para X Radio Network. And now, here's your host.
Welcome, everybody. The opening music tonight was called The Hooded Man by Peter Gundry from his fantasy album, Tarot Major Arcana. And how appropriate is that, considering that tonight's show is all about the tarot with my guest, Victoria Gross. Victoria is a clairvoyant and medium who's been doing readings professionally since 1987. And her background is in tarot, palmistry, mediumship, crystal gazing, and psychometry. She's a second-degree Reiki and certified in magnified healing. And in 2001, she created the North Orange County Tarot Society, which ran for 5 years. And now she's up and running with an amazing new book, which will be out soon, called Tarot Meditations for the Soul. And having a sneak peek at it, it kind of blew me away because it gave me a whole different perspective into the tarot itself. And we'll get into that in just a minute, but it would probably be a good idea to magically remove the tape over Vicky's mouth and let her speak for herself. So, Vicky, hello.
Hi, Marla. Thank you for having me on the show again.
Well, you know what? This is an amazing book. And just so people know, I just have to say that you've always been my go-to tarot person, and you've helped me a great deal in understanding the deck and the readings. But I'm going to have to read the blurb off the back cover because, I mean, I couldn't have said it any better. And this is kind of why we're doing this on the show tonight, because, like I said, this way that you've written it approaches the tarot in such a different way than most other ones do. And you've gathered information, put it together, and how you did that was even more interesting. But we're going to talk about that too. But here's the blurb from the back cover and what drew me in. It said, "The world of tarot is a world of symbolism and intrigue. It's a language of the soul with a journey all its own. The journey reveals landscapes of the seen and the unseen. Landscapes that are spiritual, mental, emotional, and physical in nature. Landscapes which exist in all of us. It's like a world, it's a world like no other. It is universal in its archetypal symbols and personal in its interpretations." So that being said, Vicki, where did this book come from? Where did the idea start brewing in your brain?
Oh my goodness. Well, it started years and years ago. I want to say a couple decades ago, and it has been on the shelf and off the shelf. It's taken different incarnations, and it started when I was doing the North Orange County Tarot Society, that I had an idea, and I had a website at that time. I no longer have a website for that group. I have a Facebook page, which we'll, you know, discuss later, how people can find me. And I wanted to do like a card a day. So I did just a card a day and wrote like a little paragraph for it and just an affirmation. And I loved it. And so I just kept it, you know, and did that and put it back on the shelf. I tried to get it published and I couldn't get it published. And then about, gosh, I want to say maybe 8 or 9 years ago, my friend Rosemary Ellen Guiley, she was at the house and we were sitting at the kitchen table, the dining room table, having coffee, and I pulled it out for her and she really liked the concept and the work. And she has started her own publishing company, and so she contacted me last year and said, "Hey, do you still have that book?" And I said, "Yeah." She said, "Well, you know, would you like to, you know, get it published? I'll publish it for you." And I said, "Perfect." So I told her I would have it done within like a month, and I started it, and it's like, oh, here it is a year later. It totally transpired into, you know, more work. And I'm really pleased with it. And it's been a lot of work. And I really do thank you for helping me with going over the first rough draft of the cards. And basically what I wanted to do is I wanted to have just a book that people could read, pull it, you know, pick a page or even start at the beginning. And just in their morning meditation, you know, just read something that would be inspirational. So each card will have like maybe 3 or 4 paragraphs of something that's very inspirational for them. And then there is an affirmation. And I know we're going to read one of the pages later on. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how it all started. So I've been working on it for a long time. And this was really a challenge for me, unlike, you know, the book Ghosts of Orange County that I wrote. I mean, that took a year, but that was stories and that was experiences. This really brought me into deeper levels of myself. And some of the cards were easy. Some of the cards were very, very challenging to get them to talk with me because I did build a relationship with the cards. And the deck that I use is the Silver Era Tarot, and that's the same artist and that did your Witch's Oracle, correct?
Yeah, Ania Khan. Yeah, she's done many, many decks. And it was kind of neat when you said you were using her deck. So, okay, now we're sharing an artist. This is good.
I know. And she was very gracious. And they were very gracious in giving me permission to use the deck. And it is a very beautiful deck. You know, it's shades of gray with a little color in it. Mm-hmm. And I really fell in love with the deck. I think you showed that to me, you know, when it first came out. Yeah. And I always kept it. And it was just a really wonderful deck to work with. And it took me, like I said earlier, it took me to different levels within myself, not only because of the major arcana being the archetypes, the cosmic blueprint of behavior that we can use, but the minor cards really, I got a, let me see how I can say this. They were more esoteric than what I'd even thought of. So it was really wonderful to work with them. And those meditations, I think, are just as valuable and powerful as the majors. And so much, you know, a lot of people pay a lot more attention to the major cards, but these minor cards are very important for us also. And they work with the affirmations, which we'll get into.
Yeah, we definitely will. But, you know, just when you're saying that, a question came to my mind. In working with this deck to get the messages of each card, do you think that if you had used a different deck, the messages might have been different?
Absolutely. Because when I first did this over, you know, however many years ago with the other deck, the writing was different. And then the deck that I was using, the person pulled out. She didn't want me to use that, which was okay. So I had to go back and really start all over again, because each writing is what I wrote for that deck didn't necessarily apply for this one, because you're looking at the images on each card.
Right.
So that was a challenge, but I kind of just had the format already, so that was easier in that way.
Yeah, you have the template going, so yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, let's mention that this isn't a regular tarot instructional book that teaches people how about spreads and things. It's a more personal way to look at the tarot, if that makes sense, right?
Absolutely, yeah. It's not a tarot instruction book. There will be information on the history of the tarot, and I will, you know, put what the majors mean or basic kind of universal meanings, just so if people want to have an idea. But there's no spreads, and it's not saying when you say pick the Knight of Wands, which I'll be reading later, it's not saying exactly what the Knight of Wands means or anything. So it's not a tarot instruction book whatsoever.
Yeah.
There'll be chapters on on meditation, affirmation, and the history of the tarot. And like I said, some information on the archetypes of the majors and things like that, but just general.
Yeah. Now, don't you think, too, that, yes, all the books usually say what each card represents, but that's just really basic, because isn't it more important for you to be familiar with your own deck and not necessarily follow what the booklet in it said if you're seeing something different?
Very true. And I have always taught my students is like you want to know the basics. And I really believe, or I like to teach my students, you know, start with the Rider-Waite because it is the simplest deck. And people discount that deck now as being too simple, but there's so much esoteric messages in that deck that I think it's still phenomenal. And I always tell people is you want to learn the basics and think of that as an outline in a coloring book. And our intuition is the crayons. Our intuition is the color that we can use, but we do need a structure. I do have a difficult time with people who want to study tarot and say, oh, I don't need to know anything about it. I'll just use my intuition. You know, I have a little challenge with that. I think with anything, we need to have a foundation in that subject, whatever it is that we're working with.
That's kind of like a chef who just doesn't use a recipe to begin with and just freelances and instead of knowing the basics and reading a recipe and then making it better on his own once he gets the basics sort of thing.
Yes. Yeah. And you've written cookbooks, so that's a good analogy.
That just caught me into head. I don't know why it came into my head. but it's true. You know, doctors don't get diplomas until they pass a course, and that's kind of the same thing too. You have to,
right?
You get the fundamentals in anything you do are important, because you might miss out on a lot if you don't. You know, it's
very true.
Yeah. So you said that your intent for writing this book was for self-discovery and empowerment. Now, can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, we have seen through eons, you know, tarot has taken so many transformations itself, you know, first being in the card game when it was first created. I mean, that's what the history is telling us, you know, because it comes from the, you know, it's created around between 1420 and 1450. That's mm-hmm. the oldest known cards. And so it's more of a card game for nobility. And then, you know, around a couple, you know, 300 years later or so, 1700s, 1800s, it was came into more of an occultist thing for divination. Mm-hmm. And it still is, and there's nothing wrong with that. I've been a professional reader for, you know, 30-some years, and I have no problem with divination. But now I think we're seeing that it's coming more into the realm of self-transformation. That is what I like working with now, is how do we use these images to get to those parts of ourselves that we can work on or experience. So I think we're seeing through the, you know, hundreds of years, the transformation of the tarot itself. And I think it's beautiful that we're seeing this transformation.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, sometimes, okay, here's my little pet peeve, not about the transformation or anything, but I guess I'm a purist, all right? So we get all these decks, and I've given you some of these and told you why I was giving them away, because I used to get a bunch from Schiffer. But they are the weirdest decks. I mean, they have the 78 cards, and they all have the right names on them, but they have nothing to do with what I learned each card represented as a basic, or they'll have a number of cards that are kind of made up and don't make any sense to me and stuff, which to me isn't the tarot. But again, that could just be my rigidness in like liking the tradition of the originals. But I think they get carried away sometimes now that you can't pick up a deck. It used to be you could pick up a deck no matter who did it, and you knew what to expect. You could read the cards and understand the cards. But now you pick up decks and you go, wait a minute. How is this tarot? You know, I mean, how? It doesn't make any sense. So that's my little pet peeve. And I know you graciously took those decks off my hands, but I don't know that you know, whatever.
Just because I collect them.
Yeah, that's the whole point. I mean, you can't necessarily read those cards. But again, maybe I'm just old-fashioned or something.
No, I agree with you. I mean, there's, you know, so many decks out on the market, and I really don't think that half of them should even be called tarot decks. I don't know what they are. Mm-hmm. And I think the danger is when there is no foundation, when there is no fundamental learning about what the tarot is, you can get people using these cards or giving a reading for someone, and it's like, well, what does that mean? You know, where are they getting that information? How skilled are they? Yeah, and some of those decks that you gave me, it was like, wow, how would I even use these, you know?
Yeah.
So I think what we saw, though, was years ago when all the angel oracle cards came out. You know, there's a plethora of oracle cards here and there, and I use them, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying that they're not good, but what I'm saying is that they're a crossover. They were the bridge that made tarot a lot more acceptable to the mainstream society. And I think a lot of these, that's what a lot of these very unusual decks that we're seeing that have really bizarre stuff on them do, that they just make it a lot easier. Because I still think that, you know, when you get down to the nitty-gritty and people see, like, the Rider-Waite or the Toth deck or the Voyagers, some of these really, you know, old decks that have been around for a while. And, I mean, the Voyagers just been around, I think, I forget. I got that when it first came out, and I forget if that was in the late 80s or 90s. You know, but that still is a great deck. But when people see, like, the Rider-Waite or some of the older decks, they still get a little bit scared, you know, especially if, like, the challenging cards come up, like the Death or the Devil, you know. And those were cards challenging to write about, or the Ten of Swords or the Three of Swords, because, you know, those are the shadow side of who we are. And I think a lot of these newer decks, they don't put those in there. Yeah, I could be wrong, but when we don't work on that shadow side and accept that shadow side of us, then we're not complete and whole, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. I'm reading chat real quick, and somebody says they hate the Rider-Waite original deck. And then Kat saying, do most use divination as a forewarned is forearmed thing? What do you think?
Oh, I think so. I agree, you know, 100% with that, you know. And that's why I've always taught, too, is that, you know, when we're given these cards that are, let's say, problematic or obstacles, I look at them as speed bumps in the road or potholes. Mm-hmm. You want to slow down because you don't want to go over a speed bump really fast. You're going to, you know, spin out. In the same way, it does give us, like, you know, let's slow down or let's take, is there another route we can take? Yeah, so I think, you know, being forewarned is very, very important.
It is. And but, you know, we have to say, too, that, yes, it's good to be forewarned. But secondly, use readings, as you're doing for yourself, as a roadmap, not as the gospel, because nothing is carved in stone. If you don't like what you get, you can change it, right?
Well, and that's why when we're given cards as a warning card, we're given them to change if possible. And again, like you said, no reading is written in stone. And that is such a fallacy. If we, you know, this is the way it is. It's like, no, that person can get up and change that reading the minute they walk out the door. But I think the readings are great for clarification and verification of what's going on. And some of the energies that are coming in, you know, coming down the pipe. If you don't like it, let's change them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is really important. But I think people are so used to, you know, instructions. You know, they read the book and, okay, it's in this book. This is how it has to be. Instead of looking at the book as kind of like the guideline and you know, the roadmap, but whatever, it's so much easier. You know, you're talking about difficulty. And one of the things that you say right off the bat in the book is that it's really important to connect with the cards. And you definitely bonded with them, as you said, in writing the book. And I wasn't the least bit surprised when you told me about it. I mean, it was really interesting hearing the process, but talk about difficult cards. I know that one card in particular gave you gray hair. You just, she didn't want to speak, did she? A tough one.
Oh, I'm busted.
Well, it happens. Yeah, I mean, you know, go ahead.
Well, you know, yeah, that some of these cards would, they were really ready and willing and happy. And some was, I was like pulling teeth, and some it's like, here, let me bribe you, you know? And some of it was very challenging. I mean, I'm thinking, okay, I have the Ten of Swords, or, you know, how do I make that inspiring for someone when they want to get up and have their coffee and read something inspirational, you know? Mm-hmm. So it really, some of these cards, I mean, I would sit at my desk at the computer just staring at it for, you know, like an hour going, hello, you know? Yeah, and then the one that you're talking about was, yeah, that's interesting.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, so you're looking at the card. So tell everybody, I mean, do you go, because this will come up, somebody will be scratching their head right now. When you're looking at those cards and drawing out the message from them, are you kind of in, you know, doing a little mediumship thing in a sense of, are you kind of going into a small little trance or opening up yourself well enough to hear it? How does one go about that?
Well, you know, I would sit at my desk, you know, my computer, and I have certain words of power, which I would use in the beginning, you know, just to bless the work. And then I would just sit there for a while and stare at the cards. I can't say that I was conscious of going into a trance or did anything. I usually had a glass of wine with me. You know?
That always helps, yes.
Mm-hmm. Especially after some of those cards, it's like, well, maybe I need another one, you know.
Yeah.
But I just kind of relaxed and just would talk to the cards like I would talk to you, you know. It's like, tell me your message. So for me, it wasn't like an out-of-body experience that I was doing this really wonderful, like, relaxing thing. I was just like, I'd be talking to you, you know, talking with the cards in a really respectful manner. Now, other people may do it different ways. So whatever works for someone is what they need to do. For me, like you said, writing this, I would try to relate to the card, you know. I would try not just to be that card, but just to really, like, who are you? What is it that you want to say to me? What is your message to people? And the cards really, they were their own entity. They were their own community. And so it was really a beautiful experience for me that I had never had before with a deck, because I never did anything like this on any level with any of the decks I have. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was just really being like with a friend, you know. Mm-hmm. Tell me who you are. Tell me what you have to say. And that's how I approached it, you know. And you know, made sure that my environment was calm and peaceful, but I didn't go into a trance or anything.
Mm-hmm.
I may have without realizing it, though.
Or
I don't know.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, I guess in the broad sense, you were kind of channeling the cards in that respect.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Yeah, I was the avenue for their message.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you had 78 cards to channel. So, of course, when there's any big group of people, some are good, some are bad, some are mischievous, some want to tick you off. And some of them just are clamming up. So, yeah. What I was thinking about it when you were telling me about it, like, oh, my God, that's a chore. Because each one, it's not like any of them are like each other. I mean, each one has their own possibilities and traits and messages. And oh, my God, you know, that was some undertaking. It really was.
Yes, it was. I'm not sure I'd ever do it again, but it really was. And I'm so grateful that I did it. I had the opportunity, and I'm very grateful to Rosemary that she, you know, believed in the work enough to want to publish it. And I'm grateful to the cards, to the artists for, you know, letting me use their beautiful deck, giving me mm-hmm. that permission. It was a big undertaking. And then it took me, you know, basically a year, I from last June until April, and then May, I just took some time off because I had finished all of the cards. It took me that long because mm-hmm. it wasn't something. Sometimes I would sit at my computer and nothing would come. And, you know, as a writer, that happens to us. So it's like, okay, I'm here, but nothing's happening. So tonight's not the night. And then some nights I could put out four or five cards. So it just really depends. But it was a beautiful undertaking and a very much a challenge for me. But I wouldn't have traded for anything in the world.
It's good that we get out of our comfort zone and do something that is challenging because that makes us better all around. And I'm sitting here chuckling because I just looked over at the chat room and Cece wrote, Eight of Cups card, message. Okay, knock it off. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they all have their meanings and messages and stuff.
Oh, and they do. And you know,
I
was going to say, that's the thing that I really liked about all of this was that those cards that are conflicting or, you know, sad or whatever, that brings us to that, again, that shadow side of ourselves, like I said earlier, which really is a part of our life. You know, mm-hmm. it's really blending the light and the dark together.
Yeah.
And I think that's what so many, the cards are a story. They're a roadmap of who we are, of our lives. And our lives on this planet are, you know, it is light and dark. Sometimes it's really wonderful, and sometimes it's like, wow, that's a big storm.
Well, you can't have one without the other. You know, it's mm-hmm. the duality of it all. All right, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, about 2 minutes, we'll talk a little bit more about the journey, beginning with the Fool and where it ends. So we'll be right back.
All right.
Don't go away. There's more Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks right after these important messages.
Are you haunted by shadow people in the middle of the night?
Do you secretly love all things creepy and spooky, enjoying ghost stories and horror fiction from the best storytellers?
Do you have a true ghost experience you want to share, but no one will believe you?
If yes, listen to The Professionals on What Are You Afraid of? Horror Paranormal Show, Friday nights at 9 p.m. on Para-X Radio and at www.whatareyouafraidofpodcast.com.
What are you afraid of on Para-X?
Our creepy and demented hosts are on call to provide you with all your spooky needs with true ghost stories, interviews, indie music, and new horror fiction.
We are ready to scare you.
Para-X.
From Haunted Road Media comes an exciting new novel by author Marla Brooks, Soul Connection, A Deadly Obsession. Two lost souls, ripped apart by murder in another century, find each other again in the present, only to discover that the murderer has followed them through time. Can their love save them, or will history repeat itself? Find out in this captivating new novel by Marla Brooks, Soul Connection, A Deadly Obsession. Available now on Amazon.com and at BarnesandNoble.com.
Demons, vampires, werewolves, skinwalkers, all of this and more, Sunday nights at midnight on the Staring Into the Abyss radio show. Come, get lost with us.
Welcome back to Stirring the Cauldron. Once again, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
And we're back with my guest, Victoria Gross, and we're talking about her upcoming book, Tarot Meditations for the Soul. And before the break, we were talking about the journey. And, you know, some people who aren't really tarot people might not know, or some that even read but still might not know, because sometimes you just pick up a deck and don't know the history behind it or whatever, that the cards are all about a journey. I mean, it begins with the Fool and ends with the King of Pentacles. But so there's the journey in the cards. But then again, this book also takes us on a personal journey of our own souls as well, right?
Correct.
And,
definitely.
And you've got to be open to it, too. I mean, realize it, right?
Oh, well, yeah. You know, because like we said earlier, you know, I mean, it is the journey of the soul, of the self. And I think that's the beautiful part of the tarot. And this is where a lot of the new cards that are so bizarre really miss that. Divination is really fine and good. And like I said, I've been doing it for 30 years as a professional reader. But let's bring it into a deeper part of ourselves now. I think that, you know, there's so much going on, transformation going on with people, that these cards can really bring us to a deeper part and deeper level. It's like palmistry, you know, our hands are a roadmap of who we are. They're going to change as we change. And, you know, you can read, you know, like maybe an affirmation or a paragraph of, let's say the person was asking about the Eight of Cups, and get the information that would assist them in their life today. And a year later, it will bring them to a different level.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's important that we look at these as more than just divination tools.
Yeah, and there's many layers. I mean, you know, again, like peeling the proverbial onion. You just have to keep peeling, because you're never going to get to the center, because there is way more than we realize when we're doing all this in any form of divination. You know, some people take divination at face value. Well, here's the pendulum and it said yes or no. And okay, it was fun to play with that. Now I'll put it away. But every divination tool that we possibly can get our hands on has its own intrinsic background and meaning and I think it's important for people to realize before you pick something up to do divination, whether it be a pendulum, a tarot deck, whatever, find out about it before. Know what it's capable of. Read up on it, and it'll enrich the experience of doing the divination on yourself, really.
Yeah, and that is very true. And what I really like about the tarot is that the information we can get is never-ending, not only about ourselves, but just about the cards. I'm a member of Builders of the Adytum. I've been for over 20 years, and I really like their tarot studies. And with the advent of the internet and all these great YouTube channels, you know, I'm learning more things about the tarot. I'm like, oh, I never thought of that before, or I never thought of that before. Or, you know, even with the Voyager deck, which is a beautiful collage deck, that I've been working with since it ever, you know, since it came out. I think it was about 6 months ago, I looked at the card and like, oh my gosh, I never saw that in there before. So that's the beauty of the tarot, is that our learning is never ending. I think people get afraid of it, like, oh, they have to know what this is and this is and this is, or they just don't do that and it's all intuition or, you know, psychic ability. But really, when we get to know the foundation of what these cards are and really study them, our soul growth is amazing. They really do help us. I mean, Carl Jung, you know, did all the archetypes of the tarot. And there's a lot of good books on psychology of the tarot, you know, the archetypes. So I always encourage people to, you know, make their studies very important if they're going to, you know, do anything with the tarot. And I'm a traditionalist, so, you know, I stay with the traditional decks, and that's one thing I did like about this deck. It was very close to the traditional deck.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some things were a little bit different, but you got the meaning. And again, you know, I know a lot of people don't like the Rider-Waite, and it doesn't speak to them. That's okay. There's, you know, other decks that are similar to that. But when we get too far away, I think, from the decks, I think we're really losing the essence of things, like how we stated before.
And you're talking about how some people don't get involved with a certain deck because it doesn't speak to them. And there was talk about that in the chat room a second ago about how to pick the right deck. But and I'll let you address that in a second. But one thing that I really need to bring up before I forget is, if you pick up a deck and it doesn't resonate with you, don't be discouraged about tarot in general, because it's just that deck. It's not that you don't have the capability or the ability to do it. It's just that that deck isn't the one for you. Now, you can take over.
Well, no, I agree with you 100%. And, you know, I mean, I've picked up and you've picked up, and we've seen a lot of decks that were like, oh, forget that one. You know, that doesn't speak to me. Right. So, I mean, the person does have to have a deck that speaks to them. I guess, though, what I'm saying, if the deck is very way out there, you know, I think it gets a little problematic. And we're seeing a lot of decks that are just really crazy, you mm-hmm. know. I don't know what to say, but there's hundreds of decks out there. And some are really beautiful. And I just saw a couple decks that I like. One was the before tarot deck and one was the after tarot deck. And I thought, oh, those are interesting concepts. So I thought, well, that was neat. And they were using, I think, the Rider-Waite or similar to the Rider-Waite. It reminded me of the deck I have. I think it's called Tarot of the New Vision or Revision. I have it in the closet here. And it's with seeing behind the Rider-Waite. So it's the Rider-Waite, but the backside of it. And I thought, that's a great deck of like getting underneath the situation. So, I mean, I'm not sitting here, you know, promoting the Rider-Waite at all. People have to take whatever deck they feel comfortable with and work with. But I think we need to have a little bit discernment and discretion about, there's a lot of decks out there that are not going to really fit into the realm of tarot. You know,
yeah.
They're just art decks, let's say.
Exactly. Now I'm going to talk about how each card in your book is presented. you know, and maybe picking a card as an example will help everybody visualize it, because it's not like each page is not like reading a book, a whole page, you know, 10,000 words on a page. It's broken up, what, in three categories? I'll let you explain that, and then I'll let you read it.
Right. There'll be the picture of the card, and then there'll be paragraphs. Some cards, there's more paragraphs than others. I mean, but it's not the whole page. You know, some cards had more to say than others. And then I have an affirmation. And so I think this is what we were going to talk about, the affirmations. You know, I try to keep affirmations short and positive and in the present moment. You know, so with the affirmations, most of them are pretty short on that. Mm-hmm. So did you want me to pick a couple? Or?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, yeah.
Well, someone was asking about the Eight of Cups, right? I had picked the Knight of Wands, but, you know, since someone had said something about the Eight of Cups, why don't we do that one? Because that is a little longer.
Okay, sure.
Okay. Okay, for the Eight of Cups, okay. It is time to let go and move forward with my life. I now start a new journey and advance towards higher aspirations. With the wisdom of my heart, I gather all that I have experienced and bless it. I let the past be. I don't forget it, though it no longer haunts me. The landscape before me is ever-changing. Sometimes it is barren wasteland with only the light of the moon as a guide. Other times it is a lush valley where the sun nourishes new growth. Often there are thick forests that I must navigate my way through. And then there is a mountain to be climbed before I reach the summit. But I know I have what it takes to make the expedition into the higher vistas of my heart. And the affirmation is, the wisdom of my heart guides me on my journey through life. So that's the Eight of Cups.
Yeah, so it's relatively simple. You read the message, you feel the message, and it's... It's an easy book to read. It's an easy book to understand. And that makes a big difference because sometimes you get a book that you go, blah, 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 you know, you can't figure it out. But this is, it's easy to the eye because you have each card, a picture of each card and the affirmations and the, you know, the messages. So it's really amazing to me. It was just, you know me, I mean, I'm not the tarot wizard here. But it really opened my eyes about a lot of things that I didn't think about before.
Well, good. Good. So, Thank you for that. I'm glad.
And yeah, you got through my thick skull. Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Mm-hmm. And I interrupted you. What were you going to say?
No, I was going to say, I mean, I thank you for that. And that's what it is. The purpose and my intent is that this just be inspirational, and that somebody gets what they need out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they might find that this affirmation goes better with, you know, another card, you know. And I think when you read the first draft for me, you started at the beginning and ended with the King of Pentacles. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, the cards built on each other. Some people may want to do that or just, you know, whatever the mood is, just, you know, open a page to a card.
Mm-hmm. It's just a good way of getting to know it. And I think everybody will take a different personal message out of each affirmation and everything as it applies to them. So it's not just, again, that's not carved in stone and meant any particular way. It's how you absorb it and how you take it.
Right. And if they want to change the affirmation, the thing is that if my goal is that this, or the intent is that this is very personal to whoever reads it, and however they can grow from it, get inspiration or comfort, so be it.
Mm-hmm. And there's two things that we need to talk about before we go that have to do with that. Affirmations and meditations are something we need to delve into because that's, well, by way of explaining what they are and how they're used in the book, is really important. But while I was reading what you wrote about affirmations, it popped into my head that affirmations and incantations kind of go hand in hand because you say that affirmations, like visualizations, are powerful tools which can be used to transform your life. And by definition, the word affirmation is the act of affirming or asserting as true. Now, the key word here is true, and affirming and asserting. So I think the key intent is believing, and that goes back to incantations and affirmations kind of being first cousins, huh?
I agree. And it goes along with words of power. I think the difference is affirmations are just very short. You know, mm-hmm. when I talk about words of power, I really have longer, like, paragraphs. And those I got from Marion Weinstein book, her book, Positive Magic, you know, that was written back in the 80s, mm-hmm. How to Use Words of Power. So it's the same thing. This would just probably be the affirmation would probably be just the shorthand of incantations or words of power, you know. So mm-hmm. I look at it as the shorthand thing. But the point is, too, with all of it, it's not just saying the affirmation over and over and over again, like, oh, yeah, oh, yeah. It's like mm-hmm. we really have to know it within our entire being. We have to it's not just feeling it, it's knowing it. That's a big difference. It's believing in it, it's knowing in it. And that's what makes the affirmation come around. And what I learned from working with this book, especially with the minors, is how the minor arcana is really like steps that can be used in affirmation. And what I mean by that is like the wands, because that's a fire element, that's spirit. Anything, a truth is in spirit. So the truth about who we are is in spirit. So it has to start within that essence. And then we bring it down because, you know, thoughts are things. We bring it down into the mental body of air, which is represented by swords. That's why in the book it'll be wands, swords. And then from there it has to go into the body of emotion, cups. Because thought cannot go from air to the physical earth realm. It has to be enveloped by the emotions. So that's why it's wands, swords, cups, and then finally the pentacles, the earth, where it's manifested. Mm-hmm. So that's how I used these minor arcana. And I had never thought about that before, but then working with this, I'm like, wow, that's how affirmations work. That's how we can, you know, make a successful affirmation, is bringing it down through the different bodies or the different suits.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that you're saying that, because you actually taught yourself by writing the book. You were your own teacher and student at the same time.
That is so true.
Oh,
you know what? I mean, other people that may have been out there, I never heard about it before. I'm not saying, I mean, other people may have already known that, but mm-hmm. for me, I never heard of it. And it was something that I learned while I was writing the book. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then, okay, there's a whole lot of different types of meditation that I ever thought of, because you mentioned things like sitting meditation, walking meditation, sound meditation, guided visual meditation, and so on. Just as there are many types of meditation, there are just as many reasons for them. So you say that there is no right or wrong way to meditate, and you intermingle the different types of meditation depending on the time and need. So how would a beginner be able to figure out which may be the best meditation for them at any given time?
Well, you know, I think whatever they're comfortable with, for me, it's very, very challenging to sit in quiet to meditate. The longest I can do would be like a half hour. You know, if I would go up to the ashrama, I could do that. Mm-hmm. I prefer, you know, music, listening to music, or I like walking. I think whatever would be easiest for someone. I think people don't meditate, and myself included, because it's like, oh my gosh, I got to be still. And the mind is racing, you know, 100 miles a minute. It takes me about 10 minutes before my mind's going to even be quiet while I'm sitting there. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I will do random writing, which is just writing for like 5 or 10 minutes of just every thought, and then throw that paper away just to get the thoughts out of my mind. But one of the things that I teach my students, and then this really helps not only reaching into the higher aspects of ourselves, But when people are wanting to open up their psychic abilities, it's just awareness. And this is something I learned over at the Arthur Findlay College in Stansted, England. And it's just being aware of your environment. We would sit out under a big tree, beautiful day, and just listen, close our eyes and listen to every sound. Just become very aware of our body and our environment. And to me, that really opens up a lot of our senses, because our mind, it takes us away from like the thought. It's just being in the present moment. So I would always recommend to people is try to start with that. You know, try to start with just sitting in a park, or even if it's in a beautiful part of your house, wherever that you can feel comfortable and be quiet, just to become aware of your surroundings. And that has always helped me. My meditations in the morning is having my cup of coffee, listening to some good music, reading something inspirational, and maybe taking a few moments and just really going in. And if I want to ask a question, if I'm having a challenge, or just like, what is my message for the day, or just thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So I would recommend people just do just awareness meditation.
It's funny that you said that, because I came across something the other day, and it said, as a pagan, I found that 99% of my practice and worshiping consists of going outside, sitting still, shutting up, and just listening.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is brilliant. I mean, mm-hmm. and that's really what it is to me, you know?
Yeah.
And the walking meditation is, it's really kind of the same thing. It's just being aware and being aware of the environment that we're walking in. And even if it's on a busy street, you know, putting down that cell phone or not thinking about this or that, just being aware of who we are in this moment. And for me, that's a form of meditation.
Yeah.
Because that will bring us to higher levels within ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Now, I always try and point out when we come across books like this, that readers do not need to be students of the tarot in using this book. Just like, you know, people will pick up a spell book. You don't have to be a witch to do that. So this is a book for anybody. And so why would people pick it up? What would be like the incentive for somebody that didn't know tarot and just picks up the book?
I think the incentive would be just when they open up to a page that the card is on, is that they would read something that would be, again, like I stated earlier, inspirational, empowering, that would be of some, or comfort, or to know that, like, when you've got the Ten of Swords, you know, things mm-hmm. do get better once we stop resisting. You know, that can also give a sense of direction for the roadmap of their life, of who they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you know, I just make it clear that you don't have to be a student of the tarot or a user of the tarot to get something out of this book or to understand.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. Like I said, I do put, you know, just some very brief meanings, and like how you saw, you know, mm-hmm. just to give people an idea if they want to look at that. But this is not a how-to tarot book. Nobody has to even know how to use tarot. This is a meditation book. It's something for the soul. That's why it's called Tarot Meditations for the Soul. It's a very personal, deep book. Mm-hmm. That's the goal.
Yeah,
it's amazing. That someone can use.
Yeah, and I mean, we all need a little self-help, and it can come in many ways, but it doesn't have to have a label on it that you have to belong to that tribe in order to get the benefit of it. In that sense.
Yeah, and you know what? And hopefully, too, you know, someone will read this and they're like, have their whatever deck they have, and like, oh, I can do this with my deck, you know? Mm-hmm. That it can be very personalized.
Yeah. That would be kind of neat, too. I'll have to think about that, because
I think all of us that are, you know, writers or artists in whatever way, that is the goal that we have, is just to be, it's like the hermit. You know, lighting, having that lantern, it's just to light the path for those who come behind us, because we have had many wonderful teachers that have had their lamp out in front of us. So it's like we pass it on, mm-hmm. you know. And so, if someone's like, I have this deck that's totally different and I can do that with this deck, then so be it. You know, that's helped them in their life.
Yeah, exactly. So when is the book going to come out, more or less?
You know what? I hope in the fall. I'm going to shoot for that if I stop editing it like I told you today. I was waiting. So I was like, okay, I crossed this out. Okay, I've got one more. I'm putting it away. So I hope so. That's what we're going to shoot for. And, so we'll go from there. But, I'll post. And I do have a Facebook page called Gateway to the Unknown that, you know, I will post the information there.
And tell us some of the other stuff that's on Gateway to the Unknown, because it's a whole cornucopia of neat things.
Well, you know, I do paranormal investigating, and I was the lead story producer on the show, My Ghost Story, about 10 years ago now. And then on Case Files Unknown, that aired on Destination America in 2015. So I'm not doing anything at this point except for this book, but I do volunteer at the Fullerton Museum on their annual ghost walk. So that's about it.
I am the
research or the caseworker for North Orange County Paranormal Society, which is, you know, the group. They also, those guys volunteer at the Fullerton Museum too for the ghost walk. They do a really good job.
What about classes? Are you giving any classes? Are you giving any readings? What's up with all that?
I've kind of taken a sabbatical from readings at this point. Not sure when I'll go back doing readings, but I will, after the book comes out, I will focus on promoting the book and also teaching classes. I do want to get back into teaching and some public speaking again. So those will be my goals, will be the teaching and, you know, with the book, once I finish the book. As you know, as an author, you've written many books, that really is the focus. Mm-hmm. It's a lot.
It is. So the best place for people to find out more about you or to find you is the Facebook page, the Gateway to the Unknown? So there's not like a website they can run to?
No, not at this time. I will be putting a website out once I get the book out also.
Perfect. All right. Well, thank you. We are out of time, and we've gone from the Fool to the King of Pentacles and touched on things in between. So thank you so much. I'm really looking forward to my very own copy of that book.
Absolutely. And thank you for having me on your radio show and also for going over the first rough draft with me. And really all your input was invaluable. So I just want to say thank you. I'm very grateful to you for everything. So we will be in touch, my dear. And thanks again. I hope your audience enjoyed it. All right.
They did. I'm sure they did. And thank you all for listening in. And until next time, everybody, blessed be and merry meet again.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Please join us again next week at the same time for another great guest and more Cauldron Stirring. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2019. The Mysterioso March by Kevin MacLeod is licensed through Incompotech.com.